pastoring, leading a church, is about caring for people.
Yeah.
It's a significant part of our role. I don't think we'd find many pastors who would say their job is just to write sermons. They would see it as caring for the flock.
Yeah.
And I think this is an important way that can be done.
Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIAC podcast for church leaders. And indeed, church leaders from any other churches, you're very welcome. It's great to have you with us. I'm here today with Becky Thomas, who's our Director for Church Governance. Have I got your title right?
You have indeed.
Excellent. And if you're watching, you'll both notice we've both got black shorts, stroke trousers, burgundy top. It's like the FIAC uniform today.
It is.
I'm not sure it's official,
awesome,
but we're
here. Uniform, I think.
Indeed. And we're here to talk today, aren't we, Becky, about health and safety. And just to say straight away that we're doing this in the context of last weekend, a very, very sad and tragic accident which happened at the Big Church Weekend Festival. I think I've got that right. And we just want to say, don't we, we're very sad to have heard about the things that have gone on, and even the death of a pastor and some other people have been critically injured. It's a very sad occasion. We're praying for all those involved, aren't we?
It is indeed. And for the organisers of the event, for whom this will be extremely difficult.
Yeah, that's right.
Traumatic to deal with.
So there's an ongoing investigation, isn't
indeed,
there, all the rest of it?
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. Much we don't know.
There's lots we don't know. And we're not going to comment on that particularly. We just want to express, though, our sorrow and sadness about it, and just to express our solidarity, really, with all those who are grieving and mourning and
working through the details. Indeed. I think for all of us who are involved in organising events, these things strike home, don't they?
Yes, it's sobering, isn't it? And that's why we wanted to record this podcast this week. It does make us reflect on what we're doing to safeguard people in church. And often when we talk about safeguarding, we talk about that technical aspect of safeguarding. We're thinking about how we protect vulnerable children and adults. Children and vulnerable adults. We're thinking about safeguarding policies. Today, we're thinking about the more physical aspects of that in terms of health and safety. And it's just a really important subject, isn't it?
It is. I think the way in which we care for our church community, those who come into contact with our churches, is just really, really important.
Yeah.
It's the big picture use of the word safeguarding.
It is.
The many different things
right.
that we do to look after, to one another well in church life.
And it has a witness too, doesn't it? So it's very early on people were saying about Christians, see how they love one another. Actually, this is not just about how we love one another in church life, but how people view us, how they see us to love one another. So it has a witness as well to the world.
Of course it does. Of course it does. I think the way in which we care for people speaks very loudly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, I would say, if you're a church leader listening to this, perhaps you spend most of your week preparing a sermon, or you're thinking about pastoral issues or spiritual issues, right at the moment, maybe you're thinking, here's a link I'm going to send to our church administrator or our operations manager. You've been in charge of operations in a church. You've had all this kind of stuff as part of your remit in the past. But at the level we're talking about, this is an issue for every church leader, isn't it? This is not just something to be delegated away. Tell us why that is, Becky.
I think partly pastoring, leading a church, is about caring for people.
Yeah.
It's a significant part of our role. I don't think we'd find many pastors who would say their job is just to write sermons. They would see it as caring for the flock.
Yeah.
And I think this is an important way that can be done. And I think the other thing is something like this can't be done by one person. You can't delegate it to that keeny beanie deacon or church administrator.
Is that a technical description of a deacon? A keeny beanie? That's what's your role in church? I'm the deacon for. I'm the keeny beanie deacon.
I don't know whether it's a technical term, yeah. But it's one I quite like. But I think it needs to be much more fundamental than that in the way that we think about the activities that we do, the ministry that we do. We need to think really carefully right from the outset about how we do things well to care for people.
Yeah. So I guess what we're saying is it might get initially, the initial work might get done by one person. It might mm-hmm. be reviewed by a group of people. But at some level, it's got to be owned by the leaders.
It has. And it can never be a kind of late addition bolt on.
What do you mean by that?
I don't think we can plan and prepare for an activity, a ministry, a meeting or event that we're holding, make all our plans, and then suddenly think, oh, we need to write a risk assessment. Let's do that. And just kind of bolt it on as an afterthought. I think it needs to be part of our kind of initial planning, really.
Now, you're hinting at something there, which I've got a question about. I'm playing the useless duffer, which is a very natural role for me to play. I always think about risk assessments in terms of sort of the ongoing ministry, ongoing activity. So you're suggesting there that actually this should underpin everything. So the one-off things we do as well as the regular things we do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's good to have kind of plans and risk assessments in place for those kind of week-to-week activities that we do. But I think it's really key when we're thinking about one-off or new activities. I think that's because we're usually doing things in a slightly different way. Different place, an activity that we don't do regularly. So we're far less familiar with it. So it just takes a little bit more forethought. The things that, you know, a Sunday service that we do week in, week out.
We know where the trip hazards are in the church. We've done something about them.
We know the things that happen. Yeah. We understand who needs to do what for things to run both smoothly and effectively, but also safely. But when we're doing something that's a little bit out of the ordinary or new, we don't necessarily those things. And not only do we not know those things, nor do the people engaged and involved either.
It seems to me there's quite a deep irony there, because I think that churches that do risk assessments probably, perhaps like we do, build that into their annual, biannual pattern of policies and reviews. We're looking at things on a sort of semi-regular basis, but they sort of come around every so often. In fact, I think we have an elders meeting now where we just do policies and we just concentrate on that as it happens. We found that an efficient way of doing this. But actually, in some sort of ironic way, sadly ironic way, the risks are probably greater at the one-off events, at the sort of things that are in a different place or do involve different people or different equipment or wherever it may be, that we're actually probably not thinking about as part of the routine. We've got this sort of strange juxtaposition that actually it's that those one-off things need some thought as well.
I think that's absolutely right. We can get in good cycles with kind of, you know, we used to have a cycle in which each September, I would resend a risk assessment to all our group leaders to say, well, this is what you said last year. Is this still relevant? Is this still applicable? Okay. So we had a good cycle. And I think lots of churches would have a similar kind of setup for those regular things. But it's the extra event, you know, the family fun day that you put on, the church weekend away that you put on, that perhaps aren't part of that regular cycle that can quite easily get missed.
Okay. Now, let's be honest, health and safety has not always had a good reputation.
No, it's a bit of a grown topic generally.
It is. And it's kind of, you know, it's been a bit of a comedy thing. You know, you can see it's like watching Only Fools and Horses, you know, Elf and Safety. It's sort of, you know, and there are always examples that are bandied around of health and safety gone a bit mad, where you sort of do everything to the nth degree, or you see it as a prohibition that's somehow holding you back from being innovative or nimble or creative, or, you know, it's the health and safety people again. We mustn't think that way, must we, about health and safety?
No,
not least because of what we've been seeing in the news, but more generally.
I think that's absolutely right. It's perhaps a fair assessment of badly done health and safety.
Okay, so yeah, we might be looking at the wrong sorts of things.
I think sometimes when health and safety is done badly, it can be a really good example of bureaucracy gone mad.
Yeah. So it either just becomes a box ticking exercise, I guess, at one level. People aren't really thinking about it. They're just making stuff up or just ticking boxes.
It's something that's got to be done.
Yeah.
The paperwork that's got to be filed, the whatever it is. But I think when health and safety is done well, then I don't think it is bureaucracy gone mad. I think it's a really practical way in which we demonstrate love and care for people. Very practical way in which we keep people safe.
That's helpful to hear. I've always kind of assumed that what that means is we're about eliminating risk. And that's not the right category, is it?
No, I don't. I think it's important to recognise we cannot eliminate risk in life.
Just generally. Okay, just, so you get in your car and you drive. You can't make that risk-free.
No, you can't.
You just can't.
There are sensible and wise things that you can do that reduce the risk when you drive your car down the road. You know, that's why we have rules, isn't it? It's why we have road signs. It's why we have speed limits.
It's why we drive on the left.
If we're in this country, we do. Yeah. Absolutely. It's why we need to know which side of the road we drive on. Those things are there to reduce the risks associated with us hurtling along in a little metal box with four wheels on it. But we can't eliminate those risks. And I think that's true in health and safety in church life too. We can't totally eliminate risk. We can't guarantee that nothing will ever go wrong, that nobody will ever get hurt, that we won't encounter problems. Yeah. But there are things we can do to significantly reduce those risks to a level at which we can say this is an acceptable level of risk. It's a level of risk that we're prepared to accept.
Okay.
And that most people would be prepared.
How do we know what that level is? Well, that sounds quite subjective. You know, a level that we would be prepared to accept. How's that a measure?
I think that's a really, really difficult one because we all have different levels of risk tolerance. Right,
so I might be prepared to go and walk across a ledge, but you might not.
Absolutely. But I think it's thinking, and it's where it's a collective church leadership decision rather than one person's personal perspective on, is this okay? It's where it's really helpful to work collectively to say, you know, what do we think is our tolerable level of risk? When we put on this activity, we're happy to say the chances of somebody getting significantly hurt are small enough. And perhaps have a sense of what would our church community consider an acceptable.
So we're not necessarily asking what would the most anxious person
be helpful.
So that, you know, this is a ridiculous example, but perhaps it helps to talk in extremes because it doesn't, it just depersonalizes it somewhat. But if someone said, you know, I'm concerned about having electricity supplied to the church, because what happens if there's a spark when we're not there and the church burns down? And you can say, well, I understand that you're very anxious about that, but that we can mitigate that, you know, we can deal with that. And there's an acceptable level of risks. So that point, you're not letting that person dictate what the terms would be.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you were to take it to the other extreme, there might be people who make a personal decision to engage in extreme sports, for example. And that's absolutely fine. That's their personal decision to do so. But we might not apply the same to our youth group activities.
Right.
Because as a general community, we would say that's perhaps.
So we are, as leaders, providing the boundaries within which people might themselves operate outside.
Yep.
So, I mean, here's a great example. There was a terrible story from Canada a few years ago, someone who was electrocuted in a baptistry because they had a wired microphone that had power in it, and it went into the baptistry and it electrocuted the person who was in it. Now, someone might say, well, I'm not going to drop the microphone. I'm confident that I can hold the microphone. But actually, we would say at that point, no, that's outside the level of acceptable risk. And therefore, it doesn't matter what you would do as an individual, as part of our policy, in order to serve and love others, you're not going to do that. You're not going to have a microphone in the baptistry. That would be an example of that, would it?
Yeah, absolutely. Or something like using a stepladder, for example. We might say one of the ways in which we think it's appropriate to keep people safe is to say, well, you shouldn't go up a stepladder if you're on your own in the church building.
Right.
You might choose to do that in your home.
Yep.
But we think that's too risky in our church building. We don't want anybody going up a stepladder when they're on their own in the building, because if something were to happen, there'd be nobody to summon for help.
Yep.
Nobody might know that you've fallen. So we're setting a kind of, this is what we think is the wisest thing to do.
Okay. Just help us a little bit with the practicalities then, Becky. Perhaps you've got if you've already got a health and safety policy, do you need to start from scratch all the time, or is it okay just to revise?
No, I think it's absolutely fine to revise. I think, you know, that's just a very kind of pragmatic approach. And actually, similarly with risk assessments, even to say, actually, we've done something similar to this previously. So that might be our starting point for our risk assessment.
Okay, so we're doing a fun day. We've got a risk assessment from last year's fun day, but actually we've got one or two different activities.
Yeah.
So we'll take last year's, we'll read through it, make sure it's still all right.
Yeah, we might look back on last year's and say, well, did we have any accidents last year?
Or events we've seen in the news might even make us think, oh, I didn't think of that. Because I'm guessing the thing about a risk assessment, there might be stuff that you just don't think about.
Absolutely. And that's why it's good to look back both on your own past events, but as you say, also other things that we see and think, oh, okay, actually last year, as a small example of this from the church I attend, going back a good number of years now, holiday club, summer holiday club for children, games that were played. We noticed one year that there was a huge uptick in the number of relatively minor first aid incidents. When we looked at them, it was a whole series of children who'd got carpet burn.
Okay.
When we looked, we suddenly thought, last year we had a parquet floor.
Right.
And so games in which you skidded across the parquet floor.
Okay.
Great fun.
Splinters, possibly, if it's not well kept.
Yeah, it was a pretty well kept floor. It was well varnished. Yeah. So it was nice and slippy. This year, we've had carpet installed. And actually, a game that was lots of fun last year caused absolutely no accidents. All of a sudden, we've got a very large number of children who've got significant carpet burn on their knees. Perhaps we need to rethink.
It's interesting what you're describing there, Becky, because I'm thinking as we're talking, Christians should be good at this. In fact, we are caring, we are loving. That's part of our DNA, to look out for others. So obviously there's lots of legislation about this, health and safety, and you know, there's lots of guidance about doing risk assessments. In fact, we've got lots of guidance on doing risk assessments. We'll put some of the links in the show notes. There are lots of resources that you've prepared and others have prepared for people to use. But actually, even before it was a requirement, Christians should have been on top of this, shouldn't they?
I think that's absolutely true. I think, you know, one of the ways in which we need to think about how people look at us, what do they see when they look at the activities that we run, when they look at us and they see how we love and care for people, that should be a massive gospel witness, actually.
Yeah. And it's a massive thing. I mean, a child comes along to your midweek youth club, let's say, or kids group, whatever it is, you know, they're entrusting their child to you. That's a massive thing. And we ought to take that seriously, actually.
We absolutely ought to. And we wouldn't want these kind of issues, health and safety matters, to damage the reputation of the gospel. Mm.
So help me out here with some practical stuff. I've got my Keeney Beanie deacon.
Yeah.
I want to use him or her because, you know, they're going to be helpful as a starting point. And maybe I'm starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Where on earth do I start? I've got no idea. I'm not an expert in this. As it happens in our church, we've got a guy who's actually a health and safety, he was an inspector. So we've got a really good starting point.
Yeah.
He's very helpful. He also takes more risks than anybody I know in the church in his personal life, but he's very, he's very good at helping us understand stuff inside the church. But if you haven't got someone like that, and I guess most people haven't, where on earth do you start? I mean, it all feels a bit overwhelming. Put it off to next month, put it off to next month. So give me some help here. Where on earth do I start?
I think, first of all, thinking through, what are you going to do at your event? What are the features of your event?
So or in your regular meetings, for example. Yeah, you know, have a look at your regular week together. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what do you start by doing? Okay, so we welcome people and we give them all a cup of tea. Fairly common kind of starting thing.
I'm liking this event already.
perhaps we give them a bit of cake as well.
Okay. I'm not liking that so much. I'm a celiac.
Well, but that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
So we need to think about, okay, so with our cup of tea and our piece of cake, there are lots of positives in that. It's a really good way of welcoming people. But actually, what are some of the risks associated with doing that? And that might be things in the kitchen because you're dealing with boiling water. You're dealing with, kind of hot kettles, hot teapots. But also, what are some of the risks that you might encounter to the team who are serving, but what about the people who are coming through the door? Are they people who can safely carry a cup of tea to their table to sit down, or do they need support with that? Are the people who might have food issues, whether they're celiac or dairy-free, other allergies? How can we make sure that we keep them safe? Lots of that is about providing information, you know, so what's the most helpful thing we can do for you? We can say to you, well, Adrian, this cake has got this ingredients in, and then you can make a wise and informed decision about whether that's safe for you.
You could just bring me my own cake. That is always acceptable.
Well, and that may be the most appropriate.
But can I just ask you just a blunt question? You know, if I'm a sort of slightly cynical church leader, perhaps I'm just saying, well, people think about this stuff anyway. We don't need to plan it. You know, if you see someone who's a little bit shaky, you're not going to give them their cup of tea and tell them to take it over there. You're going to carry it. Of course you're going to do that. Why on earth are we just analysing all this to the nth degree? Is it really necessary?
I think perhaps sometimes we overestimate people's common sense.
Okay. Are you looking at me when you say that?
No, no.
I feel a bit of a penetrating glare coming towards me.
No, so I think sometimes we do kind of things that are obvious to us are not necessarily obvious to other people.
Okay.
So I think it's partly that. But it's partly, you know, we've started with relatively small, trivial example in a cup of tea. Yeah. Actually, as we go down through the other things that might be a risk, it might be less obvious. And we've already talked about places in which there are judgment calls to make. And so what I as an individual might think is an acceptable risk, somebody else might not. And so if we're to provide direction as leaders on what we think is the tolerable risk, then we have to think through some of these things.
Okay, got it. Which starts to touch on how we then disseminate that information in the church. Because we could end up with a 10-page document. Mm. It's very clear, it's well thought through, has a list of actions. What do? Do I send that around to everybody in the church? Do I have a big announcement at the church meeting? These are all the things we're going to do. Do we just get on and do them? You know, in what sense does the whole church need to be part of that process or see some of the outcomes of that process?
I'd be surprised if there were many situations in which simply sending your risk assessment to all church members was particularly helpful. I think that risks most people glazing over entirely.
Indeed.
And engaging with none of it. Is it good for us to talk generally about the fact that caring for one another is important and health and safety is part of that? Yes, I think that's a really helpful message for everybody. But by and large, sending round a whole risk assessment is probably not going to be helpful.
No.
I think it's really important that those who are leading a particular activity are well engaged in the risk assessment for it. We might well need to break it down. So if we've got a big event coming up and we've got a team who are
doing refreshments,
then it's probably going to be most helpful just to send them the kind of, here's the five principles that we need to be following to make sure that we're working safely in the kitchen. That's going to be a slightly different list for the people who are stewarding the front door.
Yeah. Or this is very close to home, operating the bouncy castle.
Indeed.
Okay, yeah. And I guess it's okay for people just to see the outcomes.
Yeah.
They trust in the process, they trust it's being done.
Yeah.
So, for example, I know it was a trivial example, but it's not unhelpful for me. It's not trivial for me. Dietary requirements, which is a big thing. So we now, having done our risk assessment, we now have a sign, our refreshments counter. It doesn't list all the different ingredients. It says if you have any dietary requirements, please speak to someone serving you. Yep. They'll be able to help you.
Absolutely.
And we've made sure that the people who are serving know exactly what's got in it. We keep the boxes for things so people can look at the boxes and they can see what ingredients there are and all those sorts of things. So actually, in that case, it was about providing a resource, which in this case was a sign, and educating the team. Yep. You don't need then to send that round to everybody in church and say, we've done this. You're just acting upon the
absolutely.
Sort of the outcomes
that
come out.
You're making sure that the people who need to know.
Yeah.
And everybody else feels the benefit of that without needing.
And then someone may come to you, I guess, as I'm serving coffee and someone comes up to me and says, oh, I've got this issue with food and I've never heard of it. Then actually that's to build into the next risk assessment. It's something else to think about. And yeah, so actually it becomes an iterative process in that sense.
It certainly does. And lots of it is dialogue.
Yeah, okay.
It's understanding the issues that arise, have arisen, the questions that people ask, the issues that people encounter. It's knowing our people well.
Okay. Let me ask you a more practical question. So I can see that starting from scratch is quite a daunting process. Because you've just listed 15 things I could be thinking about in church. That's just to do with refreshments, let alone, you know, everything else that's going on in church. Is it okay to use a template or to use something that's pre-filled or, you know, just to get some ideas? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a massive fan of not reinventing the wheel.
Okay.
I've always been a massive fan of, do you know another church you've done something similar? Could you drop them a message and say, did you have a risk assessment?
And perhaps
a
similar church to you.
Yeah,
so we meet in a school.
Yep.
There's, you know, let's not talk to the church that has a building about what they do. Let's talk to another church that meets in a school and ask them what they do.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really important that that comes with a caveat. You can't just grab a template and sign your name at the bottom of it.
Okay, so we're not just talking about, you know, that becomes a box ticking exercise, isn't it?
Certainly
and then that
does.
Loses its value.
It certainly does. Okay. It, you know, taking an example or a template from somewhere and working through it and saying, that's perhaps not quite how we operate, or that's not quite relevant in the setting that we're operating in. How do we need to change that? Or, you know, we're doing this additional thing, we need to add it in. So it is a kind of use the template as a model. Don't take it as a kind of fixed, I can just sign my name at the bottom, change the church name at the top and call it good.
Okay. And when it comes to talking about risks, are we just talking, I mean, we've really been talking about physical risks today. Yep. Is it just physical risks, or is it a bigger thing than that when we're talking about risks?
I think risk in church life is much bigger than that.
Okay. For example, just give us some examples.
So things like reputational risk would be important. And some of that feeds into some of the health and safety stuff we've already touched on.
Yeah.
You know, the impact of poor health and safety on the reputation of the church and the gospel. But more broadly than that, you'd see kind of reputational risks, financial risks, those sorts of things.
Okay.
Beyond health and safety, they would be important risks for churches to think about.
Health and safety is a subset of that sort of broader category of risk. But presumably once you get comfortable with thinking about how you manage risk, how you mitigate it, how you minimise it rather than eliminate it, as we've talked about, the same principles apply across all those different areas.
Absolutely.
Don't they?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. You know, a kind of thinking broadly about risk is much the same. You know, what are the risks? What are the things we can do to manage it? Is that then tolerable? Are there more things we could do, different things we could do?
Now, I might still be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Where can I get some help?
So we've got lots of stuff available on the website.
For example, what sorts of things?
So we've got a number of articles on health and safety matters on the website. So some of those are kind of general. Why should we think health and safety is important? But there's some more specific topics that we've started to delve into. So stuff like food hygiene, first aid, those sorts of things. We've got articles available. We've got model policies on the website, both in terms of the kind of big picture risk management across church life, but also health and safety. We've got a worked example of a risk assessment that you can have a look at with kind of instructions on how to fill it in, kind of guidance notes on how to fill in the different boxes, and lots of links available as well to kind of some of the legislation, health and safety executive guidance on specific topics. If you're dealing with something perhaps slightly more niche that you need to know what you're talking about.
Becky, it's all been very helpful. Can I ask you one last question? Is it okay to pay someone to come and do this for us or to help us with it? You know, it sounds like something we should own, but perhaps it is overwhelming for us as a church, perhaps for a smaller church, or perhaps we're so stretched, we don't have the expertise. Perhaps there's someone at another church or another Christian we know, or just someone even isn't a Christian, but could be a help to us. Okay to pay someone to come and do this for us?
I think in some ways I'd perhaps say to do it for us is the wrong phrase.
Okay.
To pay somebody to help and support us Absolutely. Really valuable.
Get us started. You know, someone who can sit down in a room with us and say, well, tell us what you do. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Okay.
Can help us work through things. Perhaps can have some of those conversations with us about what is tolerable risk, for example. But I don't think we can kind of pay somebody to do it for us, because a massively important part of managing health and safety is that kind of ownership of it. We have to understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, what it says. If we simply try and pay somebody to do it for us, then we probably pay them to produce some paperwork that we shove in a filing cabinet.
Okay. And then we are back to box ticking, aren't we? Yeah. Thank you so much, Becky. It seems to me as well that especially as we put on one-off events, but actually more generally, this should be a topic for prayer in church. I think recent events have shown us we can't take things for granted. And actually, as we pray for events, you know, let's say you're putting on an evangelistic event at church, you do want to pray that people will come. You want to pray that people will hear the gospel. You want to pray that people will respond to the gospel. And we want to pray that people will be safe. I mean, that seems to me as a good thing to pray. So we should be making those things part of our prayer as well, shouldn't we?
We certainly should. And I think they become an important part of our gospel witness.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Becky. It's been really helpful to me. Hope it's helpful to others. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do rate and review it. Helps other people to find it. And we'll see you again soon.